You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Tuesday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Since my heart has broken and I cannot bear the pain of discussing more than these brief seconds, the Brewers lost to those dastardly LA Dodgers today. We're just going to plow right into the substantive material because, again, I just cannot bear it. We'll talk about that other light subject, politics and the rule of law and what is actually going on if we zoom out. We're going to look at two things and show you the connections between the two of them, as well as the connections between those two things and the concept of vindictive prosecutions. The two areas of the law that we're going to dive into with my special guest, you know him well, University of Wisconsin-Madison, professor of political scientists and law emeritus, Howard Schwaber, is back with us. Howard and I are going to discuss with you today these international killings that Donald Trump's administration is claiming are legal. And we're going to actually get into what is required under the law to use our military to kill a boat, to strike down a boat that isn't carrying people whose country or, say, faction or group is in any kind of open warfare with the government of the United States. The difference between being an enemy combatant under the law and a criminal. These are different things, and it's important. The second thing that we're going to relate that conversation to is Donald Trump's continued deployment of National Guards from all over the place into states that haven't requested that assistance on the basis or on the basic factual allegation that there is a rebellion or that the civil law enforcement authorities, the police there, have been overrun. Facts which are simply lies, but are the predicate lies necessary to try to invoke these extraordinary powers to use the National Guard and the military to square off against American citizens trying to exercise their First Amendment rights. So that is where we're going to start today. And we're going to get into what's going on with the vindictive prosecutions and what all of this means for us as Americans and Wisconsinites that are supposed to all be equal under the law. And we're all supposed to be operating under the rule of law. Welcome back, Howard. We got a lot to do today on this program. I'm so glad that you're going to be with me for the entire hour. Good to have you with us. Let's start
with these killings,
these targeted attacks on boats that the Trump administration has claimed are carrying drug smugglers. We're not talking about like an enormous aircraft carrier type ship with 1,000 men on board. We're talking about speedboats with 10, 11, 12 guys on board.
Actually, some of these are fishing boats. They're not even speedboats.
Fishing boats. What is the legal rule? What should the legal rule be? Like, what factual findings would maybe even arguably make that okay? And where are we in that kind of process?
Right. So, in the basic starting point of the law, the international law of the sea, is that a nation like the United States has the right to interdict vessels entering our waters and search them to determine whether they might be carrying contraband. We could do that just fine. There are arguments that have been made by past administrations, going all the way back to the Reagan administration and actually even the Carter administration, that we have the authority in the context of people coming from Haiti, that we have the U.S. has the authority to stop boats in open waters outside of our territorial waters for this purpose. Debatable, but not utterly implausible, and the courts went along with it. What you don't have the right to do under international law is blow people up in international waters and kill them unless you're in a state of war or the kind of quasi-state of war that we identify with the term enemy combatant. And, of course, that's what the Trump administration is claiming. These are enemy combatants. They're engaged in armed hostility against the United States, essentially war, that they're doing it on behalf of the government of Venezuela, which controls the Trindade gang. There are about five layers of problem or more layers of problem with these assertions. Number one, drugs don't really predominantly come from Venezuela. Fentanyl mostly comes from Mexico. The cocaine mostly comes from Peru and Bolivia. it's simply not the case that Venezuela is a major source of drugs in the first place. Number two, our own intelligence services have concluded that the Venezuelan government does not control the gang in question, and therefore they are not government actors. So that predicate is missing. Number three, drug smuggling is not the same thing as an armed attack against a country. The Trump administration is relying on a really weird logic that goes, the product in these boats, were it to arrive in the United States, could eventually end up in causing the death of an American citizen. And that's all we need to declare an act of war, to declare an enemy combatant situation. Obviously, you can say the same thing about foreign car manufacturers or manufacturers of any number of products, not even to get to things like guns. And number five, and here's the one that's sort of most glaring and most connects to the other things you were talking about in the intro, there's no evidence that's been presented that the administration had any reason to believe these boats were carrying drugs rather than essentially just picking off all the Venezuelan boats they could find in the water. And we've seen statements from people in the White House to the effect of, it's a fine thing if the Venezuelan fishing fleet is afraid to go out into the water, right? And this is essentially a blockade. We're essentially engaging in blockading Venezuela by randomly destroying Venezuelan vessels in open waters. And the technical name for that is piracy.
It's truly shocking. Just to summarize, because I wanted to get all those five things and rearticulate them for our listeners, the first one is that drug dealing or criminal activity is not an act of war. There's no magic wand. You don't get to say, oh, well, this person who's trafficking drugs is now an enemy combatant. And you don't get to do that because they're not acting on behalf of the Venezuelan government, nor any other quasi-entity, think Hamas or some terrorist group that is specifically targeting the U.S. government.
And even before we get there, they're not engaged in an armed attack against the United States.
Correct.
I mean, I hate to be pedantic, but words have meaning. I mean, we're really at that level. Selling drugs can be described as a bad thing that can cause harm to Americans. That does not make it the same thing as an armed attack on the country.
And even if it were, right. I mean, there's still this other factual predicate where they allege that the drug cartels are acting in concert with Tren de Agua, and specifically that Tren de Agua is acting at the behest of the Venezuelan government without any evidence to prove that up, when in fact the government of the country of Venezuela has in legal filings before the International Criminal Court, as well as The Hague, denied and listed their efforts to oppose the Tren de Agua gang. So you have Venezuela actually presenting evidence that undercuts that with no evidence from the Trump administration.
It's worse than that. The U.S. government has reached the same conclusion. Our intelligence months ago. So you have a situation of a government, the United States government, ignoring its own evidence produced by its own evidence gatherers, if I can call them that.
Yeah, the intelligence community, right?
Intelligence community, to rely on an invented narrative that, as far as we know, comes completely out of the head of Stephen Miller.
This is illegal. One could call it the nice sanitized term, extrajudicial killings, right? That means the United States government has murdered people without either just process, due process of international law, without presenting any evidence to that effect in any court, anywhere, with an execution of claimed unilateral authority. And even if they are enemy combatants and or what could be what is being claimed, again, the relationship with Tren de Agua and Venezuela, which, thank you, Howard, for pointing out that our own intelligence agencies concluded this year that there was no evidence, there was no credible link that Tren de Agua was acting at the behest or as an arm of the Venezuelan government. You get through all of that, and there's still, again, if it is war, gee whiz, I thought there was that Congress thing if we're in some kind of war and some semblance of disclosure to Congress before the strikes or after, you would hope before, and you could do it in the intelligence committees in a SCIF. They don't have to give away the operation. Lots of ways to disclose and inform Congress. And then Howard, and here's where I want go ahead.
Could send a text by signal to his closest friends.
Yeah, except for the secretary's buddy.
That is the one security leak we really have to worry about, even in the use of a skiff situation.
Yeah, still with the signal messages, right? The truly scary. And then when Congress last week tried to exercise its oversight function on this key area, hey, are we murdering people? Or can we see the evidence? What is specifically the limiting principle? Or is it just, well, we think we're just going to make things up and then kill people in international waters? Senator Coons asked Pam Bondi to articulate what is the decision rule? What is the legal principle? What is the limiting legal principle about how you're making these decisions, right? That is a completely legitimate question that the Attorney General of the United States should be able to answer. And yet we got absolutely nowhere. Let's take a listen to that exchange. This is Senator Coons last week asking the Attorney General about this very issue.
The government's asserting the authority to summarily kill people. It says our cartel members through military strikes against boats on the open ocean in the Caribbean. Congress has never authorized such a use of military force. And it's unclear to me how the administration has concluded that these strikes are legal. I'm concerned with what the limiting principle is, whether the government could summarily kill people. It just declares our cartel members, as well as unlawful combatants inside the United States, or if they were American citizens. This isn't about defending cartels, and these aren't hypothetical questions. President Trump assembled military leaders and said they would be needed to fight the enemy from within and to train in cities in the United States that he describes as chaotic and violent. Due process is the cornerstone of our Constitution. I'm deeply concerned about the authority our president seems to be asserting to summarily kill people suspected of criminal activity outside the law. As the chief lawyer for our federal government, you have a unique responsibility to ensure maintenance of our constitutional standards. How did you conclude that these strikes on ships or boats in the open ocean are legal?
Senator Coons, I'm not going to discuss any legal advice that my department may or may not have given or issued at the direction of the president on this matter. Regarding Venezuela, what I can tell you is Maduro is a narco-terrorist.
It's pretty stunning. And as a former government lawyer, I could figure out, because I'm a smart gal, how to answer questions like that without disclosing what is privileged advice, which would be the specific application of legal standards or principles to the particular facts at hand. There are ways to answer those questions. And Pam Bondi, like she did with every other question last week, simply refused to answer. What does this say about the National Guard deployments in our cities so close to home? And what's really going on here? Is the president truly above the law with all of this uniform and exclusive authority to just do what he wants? We discuss with Professor Howard Schwaber on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got professor of both politics and law emeritus from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, Howard Schwaber, with us. It's always great to have Howard joining us to help us unpeel the layers of the onion. We began today by talking about the Trump administration's claims that basically they can kill criminals in international waters at whim, without showing anybody any of the evidence that is necessary to prove someone who is committing a crime is actually at war with the United States. There's been no proof provided. And we are exploring, frankly, the Attorney General's refusal last week to answer any questions about what is the legal framework or the limiting legal principle under which the U.S. government is operating, right? And the argument that's being made by Attorney General Bondi, as well as the Department of Defense and Trump himself, when it comes to these cartel members, is I don't have to show you any evidence. I don't have to explain my rationale. I will just make a statement that these are enemy combatants and that this gang is controlled by the Venezuelan government, even though their own intelligence agencies said the opposite just months ago. And by me making that factual allegation, I now have unilateral authority and power to kill whomever I have declared an enemy combatant, and there is no review that can be done of that at all whatsoever. Of course, Congress is supposed to be the one that's declaring war and is supposed to execute some sort of oversight function. And our Supreme Courts, our federal courts, and the Supreme Court are also supposed to be able to in some way meaningfully understand and guide and limit the executive branch's powers. But Howard, just before during the break, you and I were talking about those two things, the factual arguments, the facts that underlie this assertion of this unlimited power. If Congress can't ask the questions and get answers to it, and courts, as the administration has argued over and over and over and over again in nearly virtually every case that has been brought about what is the limiting principle on the president's power, they argue you can't interrogate the facts and you have no power to limit the president. His power is penultimate. When we look then and we see the similarities between those arguments that are being made about this international cartel situation, as well as the same arguments being made about National Guard deployments, it is literally identical, and the problems for a democracy are equally dire under either set of problems, the National Guard deployments without factual predicate, or the killing of so-called enemy combatants because the Trump administration says so.
Right. You used the phrase unchecked power earlier, and I'll be honest, people sometimes exaggerate and people use phrases like that when they don't mean them literally. This is literal. And it's really interesting to see how the argument works. When they're in court, the Trump administration says, yes, we're in court. We can be required to show you facts, except you have no authority to make us do that because the president's discretion cannot be reviewed by a court. And the theory is it's a political question that's up to Congress. But then when they're in Congress, they say, well, you have the authority to check us, but unlike a court, we have no obligation to give you any facts or any basis on which to exercise your checking authority. They're really playing the two other branches off against each other to get to a position where there is literally no check at all on anything the president chooses to do. You're absolutely right to point out the similarity between the two situations, the National Guard deployments, you know, and this blowing up of ships, because both depend on statutes that have factual predicates. Certain things have to be true, have to occur to justify the president's action. And in both situations, they're doing this dual move of saying to the courts, look, you have the power to make us tell, in principle, you would have the power to make us tell you how these factual predicates were met, but you don't because this is a political question. And then they're telling the political branch, Congress, you have the power to stop us and review our action, but we're not going to give you any of the facts that establish the predicate. And it literally becomes a situation, we are literally in a situation, which the administration is arguing that the entire justification for its actions up to and including killing people both within the United States and outside the United States is because I say so.
Because I say so. An assertion of an ultimate, unlimited, unchecked power to kill people. Because I say so. Folks, again, I don't think you need to be as experienced with a PhD in political science as Professor Schwaber or a lawyer like Professor Schwaber and myself to know it is not okay in a democracy for a president to be able to kill people because he says so. And for no branch of government, be that Congress or the courts, to be able to exercise or apply any limit or to interrogate the reasons why, the rationales why. It cannot be so. And certainly, conservatives of good faith, I think, are troubled by this. They understand it's not okay because it happens to be my team that's winning right now. This is such a fundamental question within a democracy. And it seems to me, Howard, I am not getting a sense from the Supreme Court that they have any recognition of the reality of what's going on. They feel the decisions that I'm reading seem very happy to constrain themselves to a lot of legal theoretical niceties without acknowledging this fundamental problem that you have described.
I think that that's exactly right. And I have to say, I mean, not to be depressing.
Pile on, yeah.
I think there's a significant probability that the Supreme Court will accept some version of the Trump administration's argument based on a whole bunch of things. But two very short observations on that point. Number one, the Roberts Court loves the idea, and Roberts himself loves the idea of a super empowered president who operates essentially without checks. And number two, this Roberts Court has established a real track record of making up their own facts as well. They're very prone to accepting narratives that don't comply with the record to justify the outcomes that they want. And if you put those two things together, it's a perfect opportunity for them to give the Trump administration exactly this authority to assert because I said so, which past courts, I have to point out, have taken pains to prevent, but that's a long
to episode. Prevent. Yes. We're going to talk about how this relates to vindictive prosecutions and the weaponization of our law enforcement and prosecutorial powers. Stay tuned. Professor Howard Schwaber and I will be back in just a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're joined this hour by Professor Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, a professor emeritus of political science and law, good friend of the show, now a friend of yours. We've been discussing the fact that Donald Trump's tune that his lawyers take, whether we're talking about the killing, the shooting down, the military bombing of fishing boats in the Gulf of Mexico, or we're talking about the deployment of National Guard members to face off against citizens exercising their First Amendment rights in California, Illinois, Oregon, and elsewhere, including Washington, D.C. The argument in a court is, while we nominally, sort of on the surface, hat tip to, sure, courts should be able to have some authority over some of this stuff and maybe ask us to produce some facts, we acknowledge that you're asking, but we're not going to provide those because the president's power here should be basically unchecked. You have to credit his discretion and you have to give deference and not really interrogate or demand evidence. You just have to take our word for it. And that means we can deploy the National Guard or use our military to blow up fishing boats in the Gulf of America? No, the Gulf of Mexico, right? And at the same time, you must do that because what you are interrogating is a policy decision by the president that is exclusively reserved to the president. Well, if it's policy and politics, then Congress has a role to play. And yet, when Trump administration officials appear before Congress and you have senators trying to execute oversight of those decisions, of those political decisions and those policy decisions, there too, Donald Trump says, you don't even get to ask. So as Professor Schwaber put it right before the break, what we see coming here is a president that says I can make someone disappear or I can kill someone at will, and nobody really gets to review it at all. And interestingly enough, we talked about this on this program. Stephen Miller was on CNN a week and a half ago, and he actually said the quiet part out loud. He said the president has uncheckable, unlimited, exclusive, complete power over the National Guard and the military, and including to deploy it on American citizens. And Stephen Miller in that moment recognized, oops, I shouldn't have said that. And he rendered himself silent, something which I never thought I'd ever see. But let's remind ourselves of what exactly was said.
I would note the administration won an identical case in the Ninth Circuit just a few months ago with respect to the federalizing of the California National Guard. Under Title 10 of the U.S. Code, the president has plenary authority.
Stephen? Hey, Stephen, can you hear me?
Yeah. And Howard, what you're talking about is that code that he's referring to has these factual predicates, these facts that must be true in order for the president to have this power. And what Stephen Miller just said was, nobody gets to ever ask about those facts. He has plenary, ultimate, unchecked power. That's what plenary means. Does it not, sir?
Absolutely. And in court filings, the administration takes that position explicitly.
Yes.
With respect to courts, not Congress now. And states, and there are two 19th century cases that they rely on, one from the 1820s and one from the 1840s, to say that courts cannot, I mean, this is their explicit position, courts cannot at all question or ask for evidence or inquire into the adequacy of a president's determination on questions of the National Guard, and the, or in those days, the militia. In the 1930s, courts were a little bit less willing to go for that and insisted that no, there has to be a presumption that there's a good faith basis and what's called a colorable claim. That is, courts can, said the Supreme Court in the 1930s, require the administration to present enough evidence to show that they're acting on some reasonable basis. And that's exactly the position that not only Miller, but the lawyers in the White House are disputing right now as we speak. And it's exactly, and you're exactly right to say, it's exactly the same standard that they're using in the case of enemy combatants and in the case of deploying the National Guard to American cities. Excuse me. This is an unreviewable exercise of discretion by the president. And the only possible limit would come from Congress. And as we've already discussed, they foreclosed that possibility as well.
And indeed, we now have at least one federal court, one federal judge that has said on the record that the administration's statements of fact are unreliable. And this was Judge April Perry last week issuing a restraining order, which is under appeal, preventing the deployment of National Guard in the Chicagoland area. She said in that hearing where she granted Governor Pritzker's request for an emergency restraining order, she said, there's growing evidence, this is a quote, quote, DHS's perceptions of events are simply unreliable, end quote. Howard, that is the very thing that, again, the Supreme Court in the 30s was saying courts can and should do, which is find out if there is a reasonable, good faith basis to extend the presumption of correctness of the facts that the government are saying, that there has to be a reasonable basis to do that. And you've got a federal judge saying, yeah, we actually have evidence to the contrary. Not that indicates the reliability, that says, no, actually, we need to be suspicious of what the administration is saying. It's quite a moment.
It goes farther than that. There's really good reason to believe that Donald Trump was watching Fox News and saw a video from 2000 that had been taken in Portland, Oregon, assumed it was a depiction of current events, and used that as the basis for his decision. It's not just the DHS's presentations of facts cannot be relied upon. It's not clear that the president literally knows what he's talking about. And in the absence of a check and balance of some way to call those assertions into question, we're not just stuck with the possibility of violence being done on the basis of a dishonest pretext. We're stuck with the possibility of violence being done on the basis of a delusion.
Shocking times, these. Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got UW Law School and Political Science Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber with us this afternoon. We've been talking about this illogical, maybe I could call it a tautology, right? The circular reasoning of the Trump administration when they're in court about the National Guard deployments, or whether they were challenged in court about the shooting of fishing boats in the Gulf of Mexico. Their response in courtrooms has been consistently, you don't get to ask, you have to presume that our fact statements are accurate, even though there's evidence that they're inaccurate and delusional in some instances. You don't really get to ask, and you don't get to ask because this is about politics and policy. But when they are in the venue that our founders designed to help, again, oversee, to be a check on the political or policy decisions of a president, to wit, Congress, and the Congress members are trying to execute their oversight powers, they refuse to provide any evidence or even respond to broad questions about legal frameworks there. And this, the idea that the administration would outright lie about things or simply refuse to provide facts, becomes quite terrorizing, Howard, when you look into two other areas. I've talked about on the past, and I'm going to put a pin in this for our discussion today, But business regulation and business oversight, if you're willing to lie about it, you can target businesses based on your perception of their support or opposition to a president's political agenda through regulatory enforcement actions. That's not the way it's supposed to be done. And we have plenty of evidence, just look at Jimmy Kimmel, that that is exactly what's happening. And they may lie about things in order to justify it. But the place where it really becomes truly, truly terrorizing to me is when you look at the power of our federal investigatory police powers in the FBI and the Department of Justice. People can be prosecuted, investigated, their lives stopped, and imprisoned. And if the government is willing to lie about the National Guard, is willing to lie about or withhold evidence regarding their killing of folks in fishing boats in the Caribbean, I don't think there's a reasonable basis to extend them the benefit of the doubt when it comes to these prosecutions. We now have a prosecution of Letitia James, Jim Comey. There's nearly certainly an indictment of John Bolton, the former national security advisor, that will drop this week. We also think former military general Brennan will be indicted soon. These are Trump's enemies. They're on an enemies list. Kash Patel helpfully published one. He's talked about them in that way. He basically sent a direct message to our attorney general and said, Pam, you got to hop on this. And 5 days later, a U.S. attorney had been removed, an incompetent one appointed, handpicked by Donald Trump, who then did the president's bidding within 5 days to prosecute Jim Comey. What sort of, like, how thin is the ice, or have we broken through the ice and we're now drowning in terms of the weaponization of law and federal level law enforcement in this country and the targeting of whether it's Comey, Brennan, Bolton, Letitia James, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is not a new playbook. This was McCarthy's playbook. This was Nixon's playbook. I remember back in the day, there were people who were upset that they weren't on Nixon's enemies list. It was considered, what, am I not important enough to be in your but there's a new factor here. And so in that sense, it's evil, but a familiar evil. And it's classic. A classic example of unchecked powers. And it's not a coincidence. I mean, we've seen, you know, we've talked about principled conservatives. The judges who are most vociferously standing up to Trump at the moment are Reagan-appointed judges. A whole slew of past Republican Justice Department officials have signed off on letters saying this is a complete corruption of our practices. But I want to point to one other thing that makes it more dangerous even than prior versions of the same abuse, and that is databases. The way they found out about Letitia James's mortgage application is the federal office, Fannie Mae and Fannie Mac, that contain tens of millions of people's mortgage information, set an AI program loose in their databases to find inconsistencies. Nixon used the IRS for this, but this is a whole new level. It's, you know, when you can comb through all existing records of millions and millions of people to find some basis for complaining about something to those you want to target, that turns what was already a frightening weapon into something that's almost omnipresent. It's everywhere. You know, it's part of an omnipresent threatening state, like the surveillance state itself.
Yeah, and the definitions that have been used in some executive orders literally are sort of targeting people's thinking, right, their affiliations. The movie Minority Report was about precognition and pre-crime. It's effectively what Donald Trump has greenlit across all intelligence, military agencies, and federal law enforcement. And when you are willing to lie and courts can't ask about it, and you won't submit to congressional oversight, you won't produce evidence in the public forum, the evidence that we do know is there, you hide, read about Epstein, right? It's so frightening. And the fact that if you simply look at the most basic Department of Justice policy, longstanding across administrations going back 50 years, to prosecute, the line prosecutors have to believe that they can obtain a conviction, that they can prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt. In these instances of Letitia James and Jim Comey, and I'm certain Bolton and Brennan and others, the line prosecutors said, we don't meet that standard, and Donald Trump is personally directing that longstanding DOJ policy be ignored, and he's got just the lackeys to do it. It's not supposed to be this way. We're going to talk about the responsibilities of federal prosecutors. There's some history on this, folks, with Professor Howard Schwaber, Professor Emeritus of Political Science and Law from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Stay with us. This discussion continues on the other side.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. For the rest of this hour, we're going to round out the hour, continuing our discussion with UW-Madison Professor Emeritus Howard Schwaber. Just a quick correction. I referred to John Brennan as a general. He was not a general. He was the director of the CIA. John Bolton, I correctly identified as the National Security Advisor. And again, Jim Comey, former FBI director. They're also targeting Chris Wray, another former FBI director, that Donald Trump picked and appointed to be the FBI director during his first term. Just saying, he picked him. We're back with Professor Schwaber. We've been digging into what is going on with the Department of Justice and the FBI and the apparent targeting at the direction of Donald Trump, the president's political enemies. The fact that at a detail level, there are now, I think, 20 plus indictments that have occurred in both California and Washington, D.C., and a handful of other places that came about from these National Guard deployments, that they tried to prosecute people for things that they were detained for doing during interactions with the National Guard. And the grand juries have rejected the indictments. The saying goes, you can get a ham sandwich indicted. And we're going to talk about prosecutorial power. But the grand juries are bouncing those indictments. The grand jury in the Comey case bounced one of the charges, one of the claims in the indictment. And we have federal courts rejecting these successive appointments as acting or then as interim and these maneuvers that the Trump administration has tried to do to keep these hackish, personally loyal U.S. attorneys in these roles. Alina Hobb has had problems. Halligan's having problems. There's another U.S. attorney in Nevada that's been disqualified. This is Attorney Chadha. What should people be focusing on when we look at these different prosecutions? Yeah. I think they're ultimately going to fail, and we should take note of that. But what are you seeing, Howard?
Well, respectfully, I think you're making the mistake of thinking about this earlier. As though this had anything to do with law. I don't think that the Department of Justice is under the illusion they can win any of these cases. I don't think they care. The idea is to bring lots of them as a form of harassment of their political enemies, which, to be fair, is what Trump believes was done to him. So this is basically revenge and nothing more. And the whole idea of standards for bringing a case for a prosecutor is based on the idea that a prosecutor has to work with integrity. And a prosecutor is part of the legal, an officer of the court, part of the legal system, and has obligations to act within the law. That's not how Trump and the people around him think at all. They think of, the term is lawfare. If the old saying is politics is war by other means, well, for these guys, law is politics by other means. So the thing to watch for, I suppose, is just how widespread and how absurd these things can become. But it is very interesting, as you point out, the grand juries are rejecting, the sandwich guy is the most famous one. The fellow who threw a sandwich at an ICE agent and was taken down by a dozen officers, heavily armed, because he was such a threat.
Yes, with his sandwich from Subway.
With his sandwich. This is pushback. This is pushback on the street. And we may have seen this from juries going forward. To bring a case that is so weak. In a grand jury, the defendant does not get to testify or call witnesses. There is no lawyer for the defense. Only the prosecution's side is heard. And the only question a grand jury is asked is there enough here to go ahead and have a prosecution and take this to trial? To lose at a grand jury requires a case of such weakness, it boggles the mind that anyone would bring it unless, and this is what I'm suggesting, it's being brought for reasons other than to actually try to get a conviction in the first place.
And this, we were talking about former Supreme Court Justice Jackson, who was also a Solicitor General for the United States and a Nazi war crimes prosecutor. He gave a series of speeches in the 40s. The first time he gave it was called The Federal Prosecutor in 1940. What he said then is so important to keep in mind now. Here's what he said, quote, with the law books filled with a great assortment of crimes, a prosecutor stands a fair chance of finding at least a technical violation of some act on the part of almost anyone. He continues, in such a case, it is not a question of discovering the commission of a crime and then looking for the man who has committed it. It is a question of picking the man and then searching the law books or putting investigators to work to pin some offense on him. It is in this realm in which the prosecutor picks some person whom he dislikes or desires to embarrass or selects some group of unpopular persons and then looks for an offense that the greatest danger of abuse of prosecuting power lies. And it is in that statement, Howard, that every nonsense argument from Trump and MAGA is laid plain. We watched January 6th happen. Real crimes were committed that day. We watched members of Congress and senators hand around fraudulent, knowingly fraudulent fake slates of electors. We saw the crimes. The evidence of the crimes were there. Then an investigation proceeded to gather more evidence. And then charges were brought. That is the process. That is how law enforcement and prosecutions are supposed to work. It is exactly the inverse warned about by Justice Jackson in 1940. That is how the Trump administration is going about its business, using the massive data mining and AI powers that the government now has. Here's the enemy's list. Let's search all of the government's records using AI, and we will find the crime to charge these people with.
Is that where we're at? It is. You know, it's not a coincidence that that's also Vladimir Putin's modus operandi, although he's less subtle about it. Jackson is one of my heroes. Jackson is probably my greatest personal hero of among Supreme Court justices. Another thing he warned us about in the most terrible case in our in modern history, the Korematsu case, which the court upheld the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II, he warned us against the courts giving legal approval to the idea of unfettered presidential discretion. He called it a loaded weapon that would lie around being ready to be picked up, and we have seen the Trump administration pick up that weapon.
Folks, Howard's going to stick around for at least a little bit of the next segment because I want this point made very clearly for all of us. It matters right now. We don't have kings here. We have presidents accountable under the law.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.